I'm Fei Kwan, and you're tuned into It's About Youth. Today, we're delving into the comedy industry in Malaysia. How has the landscape transformed over the years? And what ingredients fuel the pursuit of enacting laughter? Joining me on the show today is a local stand-up comedian and MC, Guy Jin Nat. Thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you so much, Fei, for having me.
Welcome, welcome. Now, firstly, you weren't always a full-time comedian. You have a background in mechanical engineering, and then you started out in IT consulting. Tell me a little bit about that transition towards stand-up comedy. What inspired this transition?
Sure. So it started back in February 2012. So that was my first open mic ever. I still remember it was in Publica. I did 3-minute spot, and then it went well. So at that time, I was a final year mechanical engineering student. Mm. And to me, at that time, stand-up comedy was just a hobby. So I was just doing it part-time, right? Then 2013, I graduated as an engineer. I never worked as one, worked as an IT consultant in Accenture. So I was still doing stand-up comedy as a hobby, just part-time, you know. And then in around 2016, then I realized, hey, you know what, this could be a career. So I just like monitored it, but I still did it part-time, you know, as a hobby. And then in 2018, I said, you know what, I think it's time to make the jump. So after 6.5 years of doing stand-up comedy part-time, I made the jump in 2018 to be full-time.
Wow, okay. And it's, so it's been over 10 years since you started stand-up comedy.
Correct, yeah.
Was there a particular turning point that made you think like, oh, this is what I want to do full-time, rather than from a hobby, this is a full-time job now?
Yeah, so it was around 2016 when, because I track every single expense, I also track my comedy income. So there was at one point I drew the extrapolated, I extended the lines of both lines, and then there was an intersection. And I was like, hey, hold on a second, my comedy income is increasing quite high, and in future, I could make this into a full-time career.
Right.
So I just kept that in mind, so I just monitored it. So that's when, that was the tick moment for me. And then for 2018, I made a jump because I was hitting a ceiling in terms of my corporate career. At that time, I was a consultant. Consultant in my company means like an assistant manager. And for me to move to a manager, I needed to do way more things, spend more time.
Yeah.
It's the same for stand-up comedy. I was hitting a ceiling. Basically, I got time constrained. So I did all my checklist and said, you know what, I think it's time to make the jump. Yeah.
It is, it's still a very big step, even though, you know, clearly you planned it out ahead of time. You took your time as well, 6 years in before you made that jump. Were there any other specific strategies that you employed to make it like a, to make your passion a sustainable career? Because as it is, I'm assuming now that it's not always a steady income monthly, right?
Yeah, correct, yeah. So when I made the jump, there's a certain checklist that I went through. So again, applying my consulting skills to my career. So I did a simple checklist, and I always tell myself, we cannot run away from a couple of things, like money, time, people, health. We deal with all of this like every single day. So management of all this is very important, apart from your main skill set. So a lot of people in the, not just in the entertainment industry, but any industry, they focus so much on the skill set without having this four. And this was the most important, because like we spend time every day. So the main one for me was finance, right? So finance,
realistically, finance.
So for me, I made sure I got sufficient savings. I have diversified investments. I had to make sure that everything was in check. And I also track my own expenses, which is something a lot of people don't do. So that really helped a lot to actually make the jump.
Well, and here we are. You also recently had your Netflix special on December 1st. Congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
How does it feel, you know, working so hard in these past 10 years and now to have your comedy, your craft on a global platform?
Oh, it feels really amazing. In fact, unreal, you know, that feeling. So the reason why is because my first 60 minutes comedy special was supposed to be in 2020.
Okay.
So I planned it in 2019. I already booked the theatre and I got the poster already. And then we all know what happened in 2020 pandemic. Thankfully, you know, I was able to get my deposit back for the theatre. So that's very nice of them. But yeah, it did put me down a bit. And then I thought of doing it in 2021, but then there was another lockdown. And I told myself, you know what, I got to do it in 2022. And when I did it in 2022, I said, you know what, let's do it in such a way where it's a global material. So even though there's a lot of Malaysian topics there, but I made it in such a way where I think even internationals can sort of understand. Well, maybe not the entire special, but most of it. So, and then I tried to reach out to Netflix, and yeah, 1 year later, finally it's on a global platform. And it's nice because there are not many Malaysians on this platform who are based in Malaysia. You know, so right. It means a lot, not just for Malaysia, but the Southeast Asian community, you know, artists who are based here, because it's more difficult as because the industry here is not as developed as, let's say, US or UK. Yep. So it's to me, it's like a big win for ASEAN. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to tap into the industry and how it's changed in a bit. But you talked about COVID-19, the pandemic. It has obviously it's impacted a lot of industries, especially the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
How would you say it affected your job? Obviously, it cancelled your big special, your 1 hour special. But how did, in other ways, how did it impact your job? And I suppose, how do you navigate these challenges to continue pursuing your passion?
Yeah, initially I thought it was a very short break. I think most of us thought it was just a short break.
You thought it'd be 2 weeks.
Yeah. We all thought it was 2 weeks for 1 month. I said, hey, it's a nice break to just chill out, healing period. So I took but after that, then I knew it's going to be serious, right? So I took a step back and I asked myself, is this the first pandemic? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of other outbreaks, right? We talk about Spanish flu, SARS, Ebola, Nipah virus, everything, which means it's going to be periodic. We just don't know when the next one is. So I told myself, I got to find a solution if I got to think long term, right? Because if I suddenly find a workaround, it's not going to happen for the next pandemic. So I told myself, you know what, let's just try virtual comedy. So all Malaysian stand-up comedians got together. And then we went up on Zoom and then we test different settings, you know, unmute the audience first, another one is mute, then we, you know, type haha in the chat box and all that. And somehow it works.
Okay.
So we found a good thing. And even companies were also learning how to do virtual employee engagements.
Mm.
So around like around the fourth quarter of 2020, that's when my career started to shoot up again. A lot of virtual corporate gigs, and that's become like a norm. And then now we are back to live/hybrid. Yeah.
That's great. Pivoting and incorporating the digital part of it.
Yeah.
So now you're doing both live and
mostly live and very few hybrid. Yeah.
I like to move towards that's your career and your experience, but I like to move to the comedy scene as a whole in Malaysia. What are your thoughts on it? How has the landscape changed over the years since you started?
So I remember when I first started, I was dealing with Dr. Jason, Kavin J, who are both on Netflix, right? And I remember like Kavin telling me that this is a good time because we are the pioneer stage of stand-up comedy in Malaysia, right?
Mm.
Now we fast forward 11 years. I think we are still in the pioneer stage, but we are towards the end. The scene here is really good. And I'll tell you why. Malaysia has got one of the best scenes in Asia.
Okay.
And one of the reasons is because a lot of us can actually speak and understand English.
Mm.
Yeah. So if you look at a lot of international comedians, when they go to other countries, you'll be surprised. They will not be performing in front of locals. They'll be performing in front of expats.
Uh-huh.
Because that particular country has got very low English proficiency.
I see.
So it's the expats who are attending. So imagine you're a British comic. You go to X country X, right? And then you're performing in front of your own people. And you've traveled so far. So that's why Malaysia, Singapore, Philippines stand out a lot. And the scene is great in these three countries. So yeah, it's been grown a lot. And for Malaysia, we have got like 4 comedians who are based locally.
Okay.
Who are on Netflix. So that's a very strong indicator that our industry is growing.
Okay. It's nice to hear that. What would you say are our strengths and our challenges then? As you said, we are shifting out of that pioneering stage.
I guess our strength is versatility, right? Because in Malaysia, we have more than 20 ethnicities, all kinds of different states, and ASEAN is also very diverse and all that. So that is one of our strengths, versatility. Whereas as compared to a comic, say in America, where they are only based in America, those who don't travel out.
Yep.
So the jokes may be very Americanized, but Asian comics, we are more focused on doing local content. At the same time, we want to grow, we got to do international content.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit more depth in that way. So that's the strength. I would say some of the potential obstacles we may face. I think, we talk a lot about sensitivity, but if you think about it, like every single country has got a certain sensitivity. The only thing is it's a different thing. So when people say Malaysia got a lot of sensitivity, not really, because I've traveled quite around, and certain things that are not sensitive here are sensitive in other countries.
I see.
So it's a very subjective thing, you know, because sadly society thinks in a very binary manner. You know, are sensitive, not sensitive, that's it. They don't think in a spectrum, they don't think in a, you know, in 2D or 3D.
Mm.
Yeah, because we spend like, you know, like 15 years of our life shading answers, right? So that's a binary, A, B, C, D. So
okay.
It's actually more of a spectrum, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we're talking about sensitivities.
Yeah.
How would you describe the freedom of expression here in Malaysia?
Yeah. I think it's still okay. You know, okay. I think because you have to understand that it's always the bad news that goes viral.
Yep.
Good news never goes viral because it's just boring.
There's nothing to talk
yeah,
about.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So when something sensitive goes out there, they'll say, you know, Malaysia is getting more sensitive and all that. Of course, like the recent concert, there's a kill switch. Yeah, that one's a bit of a... I was a bit sad initially to have a kill switch because Coldplay is just going to sing songs and I don't think they'll do anything silly. But thankfully, it was not used. So that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that are sensitive here. But when you go to other countries, the things that are, are not sensitive here are sensitive in other countries. Like here, we can talk about ethnicity, not in a racist manner, but more in a diversified manner to understand the culture and the background, you know. But in certain countries, that may seem a bit more sensitive.
I see.
Yeah, but people don't talk about this because, again, people are very skewed when they come up with opinions, you know. It's either one end or another end. Mm. They don't like be in a neutral standpoint, you know. So I would say it's still okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then in that sense, and you say you travel around or perform overseas, does that involve having to always study the local context to ensure which jokes can pass and which can't?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, we do have... a lot of Malaysian stand-up comedians, we do have an international set here,
mm-hmm.
you know. But when we go to other countries, we've got to check certain references. So the first thing we always do is, when we have an international set, we bring it internationally, we just check certain references. Like here we say a car bonnet, right? But if I'm not mistaken, in America they say hood. So if I'm going to America and doing a joke about that, I've got to change my words a little bit so that they understand and all that. So this is just an example in terms of references.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, when we travel to other countries, we also try to write local content, as in about that country.
For that country.
So that's why we experience a lot. We do other things and try to write local stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went to Auckland early this year, and I did some open mics. I went to the zoo and all that. And yeah, I came out of that trip, maybe I got easily 10 minutes of Auckland-related material, which are also international. I can perform it anywhere. I just have to set it up. Yeah.
So it's a constant. It's a job where it's constantly expanding your knowledge and learning about different cultures and different sensitivities in different countries.
Yeah.
From your experiences traveling, then where do you see lessons to be brought back home for our comedy scene to grow in Malaysia?
Yeah. Well, my answer is going to be quite generic and it's going to cut across all industries. I would say I'm very pro Buatan Malaysia. Actually, for those of you, if you watch my Netflix special, towards the end, I actually put there like Buatan Malaysia on Netflix. And my I always tell Malaysians, you know, let's do Buatan Malaysia like Tahap Antara Bangsa, you know, be international level. Right? So it's good to be Jago Kampung, you know, but let's compete with the international folks. And I believe we can.
Mm.
If you look at every industry, I've seen talent before where we are there. We have the potential to be, you know, up there with the international folks. So I always tell people, if you do well locally, that's great, but always go international and bring your product or service internationally, and that's when you'll really be tested. And you will have a few hiccups, that's okay. But remember, if you have hiccups, you know, that's a sign of growth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Trials and tribulations is all part of the journey.
Yeah.
How would you perceive then the level of support for the arts and culture industry here in Malaysia? Is there any improvements that you'd like to see personally?
So I would say support from the people, I would say, is great, right? Because I think a lot of the people like stand-up comedy, right? In terms of, I would say, like, government support, I understand it's not as strong as other industries because I'm no economist, but the numbers aren't too great when it comes to arts and culture. So I sort of understand. I do hope it grows. And I do hope the government also takes note that we have Malaysians who are... We have five... Netflix comedy specials.
Including yours.
Yeah, including mine, who are done by Malaysians who are based here. And that is the highest amount, if I'm not mistaken, in ASEAN.
Mm-hmm.
We have Singapore has one. I'm not too sure about the other countries. Of course, we have got Filipinos, we have got Malaysians who have got Netflix specials, but they're based in US. Yeah, so it's a different ball game. So to have five Netflix specials who are by Malaysians who are based here, that's a very strong indicator. I do hope the government may say, hey, you know what, this is something great, you know. And it's also, indirectly, it's also promoting Malaysia, yeah.
And we should be taking pride in all this buatan Malaysia, right?
Yeah.
Self-made comedians who are making it onto the international stage. For you personally, your comedy incorporates a lot of your mixed heritage. You know, even your Netflix special is called Professional Mixed Breed.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a bit more about that? How has this sense of identity influenced your comedic style, and how does it resonate with your audience, especially in Malaysia?
Yeah, sure. So it all starts off with what stand-up comedy is all about, right? When we go up on stage, you ask any stand-up comedian, what are the tips? And they'll say, you got to be you.
Okay.
It may sound very generic, but unfortunately, we live in a world today where sometimes people put on an image and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be you, and it's important to tell the audience who you are. So you start off with your name, you start off with which country you're from, which state, and that's where one of it comes in. You know, your ethnicity, your family, your culture, that's something you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Number two is also connection. The beauty about this is when I share about my family heritage and all that, I get strangers from the audience who will come up to me and say, hey, you know what, I'm actually also a mix, you know, I'm a Malay-Thai mix, and I could resonate with your mix, you know, family and all that. And that's such a beautiful thing. I ask myself, what other occupation will actually have this scenario where a stranger comes to you being so happy and sharing his or her family heritage? So I thought, like, this is very beautiful, and it unites people. You know, you get to see people from different backgrounds, you know, just all laughing together. So, yeah, it started off that way, and it's, you know, it just started to grow from there. And from there, I started to move on in more international stuff, because I try not to be too heavy on being Chindian and all that. I try to have in a diversified topics. So in my special, there's some about traveling, some about animals, some about education. Yeah.
Okay, what's the process of coming up with this, all your material? Like, because you are drawing it from different aspects of your life, how does it work?
It starts off with an idea, right? So what I usually do is, if I find an interesting idea or a potentially funny idea, I'll just jot it down on my notepad in my phone. And then when I'm free, I will go and expand it. And how we expand it is, we first ask ourselves, why are we telling the story, you know? And then after, we just write it out, just like literally just vomit out, just, you know, write things out. And then we see, hey, how can I make this funny? And then apply all the stand-up comedy techniques, all the punchline setup and all that. And then we test it at an open mic, which is basically like a R&D facility for stand-up comedians, you know, a testing facility. Then we test our jokes. And then after we do a feedback with ourselves, and how can I improve the joke, we do that again, do this in a cyclic manner until it becomes really solid, and then we bring it to a bigger show, a non-open mic show, like a weekend stand-up comedy show.
Okay.
And then we bring it to an even bigger show, and then once you have lots of grade A material, and hopefully then you can lead to a one-hour special.
What would you say are some of the common barriers faced by comedians as they are working to grow their craft?
Interestingly, the answer is not related to stand-up comedy. I will say finance.
Finance.
Yeah, because
it's always, back to
it's always finance. Because people in the entertainment industry, I don't think they will have an issue with working on their craft, because they spend a lot of time. You ask any musician, they spend a lot of time playing guitar and all that. But when you ask them about finances, they're always struggling. You ask how many of them got a retirement plan, none. How many of them got a backup, none. How many of them know their insurance policy, don't know. How many of them know how to diversify the investment, don't know. How many of them track their expenses, don't know. How many of them, you know, are making use of compounding interest. How many of them are taking note of hyperinflation. So when you're unaware of all this, you do not have a safe blanket for you. And this will that's why a lot of people got impacted in the pandemic. Yeah, during the pandemic, I actually had like 5 months of zero income. And I could still go on for many months of zero income, because I have a nice financial backup.
You had a contingency.
Yeah, that's
plan.
Why I always tell people in the entertainment or creative industry, like, you got to take note of your finance. Craft, I think eventually people will, if you're in the industry, you just talk to all the sifus and all the masters. You can guide, or you can just YouTube and learn and just practice all the standard thing, you know, practice makes perfect. But it's more on the finance, health, time management here.
Thank you for being very real on that. Yeah. So yeah. It all boils down to, I suppose, being both funny and financially literate.
Yeah.
To ensure it's a sustainable career. For those who are aspiring to pursue their dreams as you did, in comedy or in any creative field, I suppose.
Yeah.
What advice would you offer based on your experiences and lessons?
So I think number one is always why. Mm. So do not do anything without understanding the why. Among all the questions, why is the most important, you know? So if you get your why wrong, everything else will be wrong. Yeah. So if you don't spend enough time with, you know, yourself, without knowing, hey, why am I doing this, rather than, hey, you know what, I just want to do this. Some people hop on a bandwagon that is really hot, like, you know, oh, that is trending, let me just do it for the sake, because it's trending. They keep jumping, and then they realize, hey, you know what, I spent 40 years without knowing what I'm doing. So when you know your why, that leads you to your purpose of life. And ideally, your purpose of life is to solve a problem that is facing my society. So for me, it's to make people happy. And one of the problems is, you know, sadness and all that, you know. So why first? And then the second thing will be to actually have the skills of, you know, time, health, people, and money management. Have that all checked in. And then slowly work on it. And treat it as a hobby first. Yeah, you got to enjoy what you do and do what you enjoy. So if it takes off, it takes off. If it doesn't take off, that's fine. I've seen people who are talented, who are singers, who do it as a hobby and then try to make it part-time, but eventually went back to corporate, and that's totally fine. Yeah. If it takes off, it takes off. So don't be so rigid and don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, learn how to diversify as you reduce risk. Yeah.
Okay, so taking the time to sort of find your own pace and your own footing in this world, in this industry. Is there anything else that you'd like to add on, Gajan, regarding this?
Nothing to all, if you're watching here. Actually, I said nothing and then I said something. Yeah, it always happens, right? Yeah. To all of y'all watching, please watch my Netflix comedy special. It's available worldwide. So if you have friends in anywhere, you know, in Europe, Africa, America, tell them that they can also watch it. And it's international material.
There you have it, Gajan Nath from Professional Mixed Breed on Netflix. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and experiences with
thanks,
me.
Thanks, Lofi. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. You've been watching It's About Youth with me, Fei Kwan. See you next time.